on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of InvestTalk. It's December 1st, first day of the month of December. And, of course, we're here to talk about money, how you spend it, how you save it, how you grow it, how you invest it. And I'm here to help in any way I can, any way with information and answers and encouragement. Now, I don't have all the answers, and I don't have all the information. I've got a lot of pretty powerful computers in front of me, but, you know, I can offer you a lot of encouragement, though. And for the long-term investor, the ups and downs of the market shouldn't be any grave concern for you. If your strategy has a more short-term focus, then of course, you got to be aware of what the market trends are. And short-term means within the next 5 years, you're planning on retiring. 10 years, that's shorter. That's just short-term. Maybe 10 is long, but 5 years, you need to be more concerned about where the market is doing, whether the trends and what's going to happen over the next year or two or three. So are the signs that can be a precursor to market moves, up or down? I wrote in my market commentary on InvestTalk, many experts are stating that since the small and mid-cap stocks are lagging larger companies, that a correction is on the way. Is that true? Is it true that small companies tend to lead the direction of the market? I've mentioned that on the air. It does tend to do that. But they have now been lagging for some time, their bigger cap stocks. Okay? And the longer that happens, the less likely they would drag down the entire market. But is it true that small caps lead? And if they don't, is a correction always around the corner? There are no studies that seem to support or deny this contention. There are studies out there that prove one way or another, but they don't, because they pick certain time frames and certain methods and it's not consistent. There's nothing that's consistent. You know what is consistent? What is very consistent is a long-term movement of the stock market is up. That's consistent. There are popular beliefs, there's opinions, but the facts to support them are not consistent. They're not foolproof. I'll pick this 10-year period and do that study. I'll pick this 50-year period and do that study. I'll pick these groups of indexes or this particular index. It's not that simple. It just is not. So what are the leading indicators? What are they? What are leading indicators? And what are the ones that we should be watching? Well, Investopedia defines them as a measurable economic factor that changes before the economy starts to follow a particular pattern or trend down or up. Leading indicators are used to predict changes in the economy, but are not always accurate. Not. For instance, bond yields are typically a good leading indicator of the market, because traders are anticipating they speculate the trends in the economy. But how accurate is that? Because if the Fed says they're going to raise rates or lower rates or going to do QE or not, they tend to push the bond traders one way or another. It's tough. It's not an easy thing. You know who is a pretty good leading indicator? Is the market itself. That's a pretty good leading indicator. And the market this year has done nothing but go sideways. Sideways. What is that indicating? All year long. Up, down, up, down, up, down, and a trend. We had a 14% correction in August. Made that back up mostly. And we're still in the same place we were. Is that a leading indicator of something? Is the market stopped showing us a direction? Well, it certainly has this year. Anyway, do you want to talk more about indicators? What economic indicators are useful to the average investor? What money matters do you need to know more about? Let's hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hello. I have kind of a tax question here. I have worked for a couple of companies this past year that I had difficulty getting reimbursed for my per diem and my mileage. The amount is now over $18,000, and I know that there's like a 2% limit on deductions, and I'm curious if I can carry over the excess into the next tax year. I would appreciate whatever you can give me on it. I'm just kind of looking for an answer. I haven't been able to find a clarification at this time. Thank you. Bye.
Well, I'm not a tax guy. I'm not a CPA. And if you need a CPA, I have one. I can give you their number, give you their name, his name and number that I like. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. If it's tax mileage not reimbursed from a company, it's a question, was it a loss of yours? I don't know if you can count it as a loss. It's a loss you didn't get paid, but it wasn't a loss that you incurred, was it, in a year? It's part of, if you work for a company and you're not self-employed, can you write that off? Well, I'm having trouble. I don't know, and I don't want to give you a false answer or pretend that I do. I just don't. You're going to have to ask a tax guy about that. Thanks for the question, though. I'm sorry I couldn't help you. Some see this environment favoring sector-specific strategies that we're in right now, sector-specific or niche portfolios with lots of exposure to high momentum growth stocks, let's say. So, should you stay diversified versus a targeted portfolio? And we're going to be talking about risk, diversified versus targeted portfolio. And that's going to be one of our talking points today. Another one thing I want to talk about is the strong dollar retards returns for the S&P 500. I want to talk about the strong dollar this year. What are some of the facts? And how much income in retirement do you need? Remember, there's old rule, you need about 80% of the replacement of your current income before you retire. Well, that probably is not that accurate. It's an old rule of thumb that maybe we have to revisit, and I want to talk about that. December is kind to investors. December. How about something? I'll give you some statistics about December, the month of December over the last many years. It'd be kind of fun. Now, be wary. Statistics can be used to fool a lot of people. But I'm just going to give you the statistics, and you can make up your own mind. Those are the things that we're going to talk about. The market had a big up day today, first day of December, so that's a good start of December, I guess. Up the Dow, up 168 points, the NASDAQ 47, and the S&P up 23. Those are pretty strong, solid numbers. We still are not near our high for the year. That's the way it has been this year. We are not. You know, we're probably about even from a year ago to now. But the market got, on May 21st, it was about 3% higher than it is right now. About. I'm talking about the S&P 500. So we're still not there for the year. Oh, well, it's been a tough, tough year for everybody. And I know it's been a tough year for you. I know it. Our balanced income program has done well. I'll say that. It really has done well for the year. Compared to the market, and it usually did it with much less risk. So I'm pretty happy about that. But what about you? How is your portfolio done? Now, looking ahead to December, I have two dates for individual portfolio reviews at two of our satellite offices, and they are no cost, no obligation meetings. And the next day in La Jolla is tomorrow, December 2nd. Then San Ramon in Northern California on the 9th, you can reserve your hour by clicking on schedule a meeting on investtalk.com.
Hi, my name is Joe. I'm from Toms River, New Jersey. Actually, I love your guys' program. I just had a question about CMI Cummins. I kind of was doing a little bit of like a Warren Buffett-style analysis on it. It seems like it has good management, good return on equity, low debt-to-equity ratio. It's been around since 1919. I know, I think the share price fell because of concerns on general global growth. I want to know if you guys thought this was a good time to buy, and also if you guys thought this is a business that would be around forever. Is this something, engine and those type of components, will we need those types of things in 50 years in the way that CMI produces them? Thanks a lot, guys. I look forward to listening to your next show. Bye.
Okay, thank you for the call. Coming, CMI, C, Cat, M is Mary, I is in Ida. It makes manufactures diesel, natural gas engines, electric power generator systems, and engine-related projects. Been around forever. It's a big blue chip stock, $16 billion in size, and it will be around for a long time. There's nothing. It's not going to go away. You know, from what I can see, I can't see it disappearing anytime soon. And it's been in a downtrend for ever since what, April, February, March, somewhere on there, down. It had a big down day today. Why did it have a big down day today? Well, there were three factors, really. It was downgraded by some of the analysts. The dollar is pretty strong, has been pretty strong, and that's been hurting Cummins all year long, hurting their sales. And China slowed down. That's hurt them as well. Is it a long-term good company to own? And the answer is yes, it is. They pay a 4.2% dividend now that the price is so low. I wouldn't buy it here. I mean, it fell today $7.96 to $92. I mean, that's what, 8% in one day. You have to be patient. You let it rest for a while, wherever it's going to fall. But as far as that dividend and as far as being a good, solid company, you're right. All of the data looks pretty solid. They're going to make $8.57 next year. That's 5% less than last year. And it's down 2% from the year before. It's $100. It's now a $92 stock going to make $8.57. So what is that, 11 PE? That's pretty low. What is the low five-year range, PE? 9 to 20. Return on equity is very high, 22%. It's got good, and it does have very good solid management, very low debt. I think it's a great company, but it's got its problems right now, and I think you need to be patient with it. And the global slowdown has been its nemesis. Not the U.S. slowdown. The global slowdown has been its problem. And until that turns around, you'll see it in coming stock before the actual global economy turns around. So just be patient. Watch it. Have it on your watch list. But you don't want to, there's an old saying, you don't want to catch a falling knife because you'll get cut. The best thing to do is wait till the knife hits the ground, rattles around, calms down, stays on the ground, and then watch it get picked up. It's very difficult to pick a bottom. No one knows how to pick a bottom. You can only pick a stock that looks fairly cheap, and it looks fairly cheap right now. But, you know, I think we need to be patient to see if it gets cheaper. Cummins, CMI, Cummins Inc., kind of like it. I like the company. Let me put it that way. It's very cyclical, though. Test the economic cycle. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Black Friday through Cyber Monday. How do the sales go? Well, if you're a brick and mortar store, you didn't do so well. Sales were down 10%, 10.4% from 2014. That doesn't mean it was a bad period because if you look at the online sales, they were huge. So it wasn't necessarily bad, but it was bad for the brick and mortar stores. Not too good for them. And, you know, that's been a trend. That's kind of, you know, they're having a hard time. People go to the store, try on clothes, look at clothes, shoes, whatever, and then they go and order it online. Not necessarily from that store's website. That's what people are doing. Our Invest Talk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART, and that's my job this hour, answering your questions. So stay with us, and don't be shy and ask. This is Invest Talk.
We thank you, as always, for subscribing to our podcast. REITs and real estate ETFs are great ways to diversify a portfolio, but be careful not to overdo it. Four things to know about real estate investments. That's one of our talking points for Wednesday's podcast. We hope you can join us then.
888-99-CHART. So what do you think a good diversified portfolio has returned for this year? And I'm using the iShares Growth Allocation ETF, which has a 60-40 mix of stocks and bonds. What do you think the return is for a mixed portfolio, a diversified mixed portfolio? The average. The average is zero. Okay, maybe to after today, maybe it's up a half a point, half a percent for the year. So don't think if you have a good diversified portfolio that, you know, it should be working this year, because nobody's is working this year. I don't mean to pick on Berkshire Hathaway, but he would be considered a good diversified portfolio. And his was down, BRK.B. His portfolio, I'm not showing it, but the last time I checked, .B, try it again. Yeah, he's down still, I'm going to say about 7-8%, 9% down for the year. So you're not Berkshire Hathaway, either am I. So you can see how tough it's been, tough. Now, there have been stocks that have been really, really good. Okay, for instance, if you had Amazon, Netflix in their portfolio, man, you did great if you had a lot of it. And that's what this article is referring to. If you had sector specific, you would either be a dunce or a hero, because, you know, there was certain types of stocks that did very, very well, but they're pretty narrow, and they're big, blue chip, techie kind of stocks have done very well. Certain ones. Others, most of the other market, and if you've been in certain sectors, you got crushed. Remember we mentioned that like 33% of the S&P 500 stocks are down 20% or more? So that's a huge percentage of the S&P 500 and a huge percentage of down for those, that section, that 30% of those, the S&P 500. That's huge down. So that would, if you had two or three or four of those in your portfolio, it's dragging down your whole portfolio because of how much it's down. Now the question is, so should you get out of diversified? Should you be sector specific? And I'm going to say no. No, yeah, it didn't work this well this year. It didn't work well this year, your diversified portfolio. But if you really want to get crushed, you try to pick specific sectors and overweight them, because the market tends to sector rotate from in one sector out of the next. For instance, if you were in oil this year, most of the year, you probably got pretty beat up. But if you bought it just a couple months ago, when it bottomed in September, you probably looked pretty good. And that's the difficulty. Can you time that? No one really can time it. Really, there's no timing in the market. You'll get, you know, worst thing that can happen to you is you get lucky and you get the timing right for the first time. And then you think you're a genius. And then you're going to find the next five times in a row you get it wrong. A well-diversified portfolio is the best way to go for most people. It's difficult. Our first priority to answer questions, as you know. So let's pick the call. Let's pick up a call right now on our listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Abdullah from New York. I'm a podcast listener. I wanted to ask you guys the question, what is the benefit of using a mutual fund like VIMSX over a ETF like VO? Their chart seems to be performing almost the same for the last 5 years. Since mutual funds ask for a expense ratio, they have expense ratios and they have the minimum deposits. So why should I pick a mutual fund over an ETF? Thank you. Bye.
Now, the Vanguard Mid-Cap Index you're talking about that has an ETF and a mutual fund, you know, you would pick the cheaper one. It's following an index, mid-capitalization stocks. You would always pick the ETF over the mutual fund when you're just following a simple index. Mutual funds are managed accounts unless they track an index. And Vanguard's the cheapest fund family out there. Both the ETF and the mutual funds both have expense ratios. I think the average ETF expense ratio is like 0.4. I know the Vanguard's are less. And then you got the mutual funds expense ratio is usually over 1.5% or so, somewhere in there. So for instance, you've just mentioned the Vanguard Mid-Cap Index and the mutual fund and the Vanguard Mid-Cap Index ETF. You'd pick the ETF every time because it's less costly. But a mutual fund has a manager. And if you're in a normal mutual fund, not an index mutual fund, then it might behoove you to pick a managed mutual fund. Okay? Otherwise, if you're tracking the various indexes, you just go with the ETF if there is one. And these two are exactly the same. They're tracking the same thing. You're listening to InvestTalk. Coming up on the next half hour, how do I invest in ETFs? Coming up on InvestTalk 101. 888-99-CHARGE, our anytime number. You can call right now, 888-99-CHARGE.
This is InvestTalk for Tuesday, December 1st. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. We have another half hour left, plenty of time to weigh in with your question. This is InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Whatever you want to talk about, we'll talk about, but you have to make the call. The strong dollar retards the returns for the S&P 500. 50% of the S&P 500 companies, 50% of their earnings are from foreign investments. The dollar has been up 11% this year. So when companies earn money in a foreign country and they want to bring back that profit here to the United States, not only do they have to pay additional taxes, but they have that currency issue where they bring it back in dollars, they lost 11% of it right off the top because the dollar was so strong this year. And think about this. The dollar is so strong. If they make something here and export it, it costs 11% more than it did just because the dollar went up. And there's been very few asset classes based on the U.S. dollar that have gone up this year. Very few asset classes. You know, commodities, different things. Very few. What has been the strongest markets around the world this year so far? It's kind of dollar related, but not really. Russia is up 15.6% this year. The Nikkei, the Japanese index, is up 11.8%. They were the notable outperformers for the year. So the problem is when you have a strong dollar, it puts pressure on our stock market, pressure downward. So because of the fact that, you know, large companies can't make more money. They make less. And therefore, earnings, I'm going to drive this into your head. Earnings drive stock prices. Earnings. Now, you're going to tell me that, wait a minute, this company earned a lot of money this year and the stock went down. That's because it's not today's earnings that the investors are concerned with. It's the future earnings. We always worry about the future earnings. Is a dollar going to get stronger? Or is it going to get weaker? Or is it going to stay the same? Well, if the Federal Reserve is raising rates and the rest of the world is doing QE, it's hard for me to see that the dollar is going to get weaker. The way the dollar will get weaker is if our economy gets weaker. It's perceived that our economy is going to be weak, then you'll see the dollar weaken. And most, I said perceived, the economy does not necessarily have to get weak. It's thought that it's going to get weak because all the investors are, again, looking forward. They're looking to see if there's going to be a recession. They're looking forward to, they're looking to see what, is the Fed going to stop raising rates? For instance, what if the Fed says stuff like when it comes out this month and they actually raise the rates, but at the same time they say, but we're probably not going to raise the rates for a long time because it, you know, this is just a, this is just to, we have to wait. The economy doesn't seem to be able to strong, to support a very fast tightening policy, something along those lines, to indicate that they're going to raise the rates once and then be very, very slow about the second time, then the market will probably react to that. The dollar will probably weaken. And you're going to say, what a crazy guy that is. He's talking about a weakening dollar and a stronger dollar. He says if the interest rates go up, the dollar will get stronger. That's because, again, investors are looking forward. They already think that they're going to raise the rates. Everybody believes they're going to raise the rates. So when they actually raise the rates, they already reacted to that. Now they're going to be looking forward to, well, what's the next thing the Fed's going to do. And if they think the next thing the Fed's going to do is be very patient, the dollar probably weakened somewhat. Not weak. I'm not saying it's going to be weak. Just weakened from its big run up this year. It's not easy. Everything is hard in this business, everybody. It's time for InvestTalk 101. How do I invest in ETFs? An exchange-traded fund, ETF, is a basket of stocks or commodities or currencies, something that many times resembles or tracks an index and many times tracks a certain sector of stocks or bonds or currencies. ETFs have become a very good choice for investors for a number of reasons. Costs are low, they're pretty tax efficient, and you can pick certain areas of the market you want to try. You can do a sector kind of investment. You can invest over a variety of sectors with numerous different ETFs. And where can you buy ETFs? Well, they trade like stocks. So you can buy them on the open market. They're available almost anywhere. And of course, brokerage firms like to deal with it since they charge you just like they charge a stock, a trading fee, and everything else. So they like them. They want them. And many of them produce their own. We just talked about Vanguard and Mid-Cap Index and the Vanguard Mutual Fund and then the Vanguard Mid-Cap Index ETF. They like them too because they're popular. And if you have any questions about ETFs, just give me a call or send me an email. Be happy to talk about it. And let's talk about whatever's on your mind. Tomorrow on InvestTalk, we're going to talk about real estate ETFs. So join us then. Check in now, 888-99-CHART, with your question. I'd love to talk to you, and this is InvestTalk.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. Look at the Select Growth and Income Program, handpicked mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity. To find out more about any of the KPP investment programs, click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Pete from Vegas again. I listen to the show via iTunes podcast. Love the show. Question I have is, in reference to mutual funds, there's a whole lot of different fund families, Fidelity, so on, whatever, Vanguard. There's a particular fund family that some advisors push almost exclusively, if not in addition to others, and that's a dimensional fund family. I don't know quite that much about it. I do understand that they have to be bought through advisors. The pitches tend to be where they are slightly higher than the index because of the way they invest. In any case, if you could tell us the good, the bad, and the ugly about the dimensional funds, I'd really, really appreciate it. I don't have an advisor. I'm pretty much a self-directed mutual fund guy, kind of guy, and I have a few stocks in addition to that. Thanks again. Appreciate that. This is Pete from Vegas. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.
Okay, Pete. Dimension funds. They're like the pro funds, and they leverage. They use leverage to track indexes. I'm not sure of all the funds that they have, but I know that what they're well known for, and that's their leveraged funds. And they do two times and then three times the index, up or down. They can short it. I mean, the fund will go up if the market goes down, or then go long. But they're really kind of known for their leverage. And Pete, when I say leverage, when you hear that word anywhere out there in the financial space, when you hear the word leverage, you should automatically assume much higher risk. Oh, they're using leverage? Oh, it's got to be higher risk. And that would be true. And the dimension funds, three times the indexes, are very high risk. Very high risk. So I personally don't think the average person should mess around with them at all. I'm not big on leveraged funds. I think that they're pretty risky. Pretty risky. And you know, you gotta leave those up to the experts to play with. Don't do that. So the Dimension Fund family, that's what they're known for. And of course, you're going to get people selling you, saying, hey, if the S&P goes up 10%, this will go up 30%. Isn't that great? Well, it's great unless the S&P goes down 10% and it goes down 30%. See, so you got to be really careful. No one knows where the market's going to go. Long term, the market's going up. Okay, that's just the way it is. Now, if you want to talk about short term, like December, what do you think the market's going to do in December? Well, I got some stats for you. I'm always good for statistics. That's me. Anyways, okay. Before we get into the statistics, let's go to a voicemail. I want to get to the phones and get my voicemails out of the way. 888-99-CHART. Brad called from San Francisco with this question.
The stock, a stock I want to ask you about, a company, it's called Fluor, FLR. I really like Fluor. How do you see it going forward with what's going on in the world? Fluor is just so globally positioned that I love it. How do you see it going forward, and what value do you have on it? Thank you.
Okay, Fluor, F-L-U-O-R, symbol FLR, provides construction and maintenance services to oil and gas, petrochemical, mining, and transportation industries. So what you should hear from that, as I'm telling you, is that only one of those areas seems to be doing pretty well, and that's transportation industries. The oil and gas, petrochemical, and mining have been really taken on the chin, and Fluor has been shrinking their sales for 2 years in a row every quarter. Every quarter. So when's that going to stop? Now, earnings were $4.10 this year. That was 8% less than last year. And then in 2016, they're going to be 9% less at $3.72. The stock is $48, $3.72 stock. So that's what, 11.5 PE? So you would say, well, that looks pretty cheap. They do. Fluor is a pretty solid big cap company, 6.9, I guess mid cap company, I would say. And it is a solid company. It really is, but I don't think you want to be an investor in it at this point. I really don't. Now, is it bottomed? Is it been punished enough? Well, you might be, because it did bottom at around $41 in October, and here is at $48, almost $49 now. So that's almost a 17% run up from the bottom, and it was trading at close to $60 back in April. But see, I don't think the economy is going to turn around enough. I'm talking about the world economy yet. I just don't think so, especially in the petrochemical area yet. But, you know, it's a good, solid company. Hardly any debt. Good return on equity. All the numbers are strong except sales growth. Sales are shrinking 10, 15%. Earnings shrinking 6 to 9% per year. I kind of probably would stay away from Fluor. There's another engineering type company out there that I like better than Fluor. Starts with a J. The symbol starts with a J. Okay. So I would take a look at that because they have better numbers. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, month of December. Okay, month of December. Okay, it has been very kind to investors over the years. It is the best month of the year. It always has been and should probably continue to be. since 1928. December is the only month of the year, of the 12 months, December is the only month that has never been the worst, never, for the year. The average gain for December is 1.4%. And that's 75% of the time, it's up. Now, December's gain is average gain is highest of all the other months since 1945. The average gain for December is the highest of all the other months since 1945. Now, be careful, because statistics can be chewed on and spit out in different ways. But in general, because you can find things that December is not the leading month, but in general, that December is the best month of the year. In general, it gives you positive returns. And it's even more positive return if the months before, the several months before, are in an uptrend. December continues that uptrend, and even at higher rates. So there's a lot to say. Of course, we had a good start of December for today, the first trading day of December. We had a good start. We don't know if that's going to continue. I try to warn everybody about statistics. Statistics are great. I like statistics. I use statistics. But they also, you know, this just tends to be true. And, it's not always true. And you have to be very careful with the statistics. You got to look at what's really happening as opposed to just relying on past statistics to tell you what to do. You got to find out what's happening in the moment and try to gauge what's going to happen in the future. Because if you're just looking backward, no one invests in the rearview mirror. It doesn't work. Doesn't mean you just ignore the statistics, but I just want you all to take them with a grain of salt. Okay? Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. That's the title of my book, by the way. It's a no-nonsense beginner's guide to the world of buying and selling stocks. What moves stock prices? Do I need to learn economics? Can I keep it simple? These are questions, and many others are answered in the book in my pretty easy to read format. And maybe this would be a great gift idea for somebody. So look for the recommended books list on my investtalk.com website. And we have a number of books that most investors should have in their library. That's investtalk.com. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. We're coming up on the last segment of the hour, so if you want to get your call in, now's the time to do it. One failing of most traders is that they ride the stock too long and end up getting out with little profit or loss, actual loss. Learning when to read charts, a skill that can pay off. Take advantage of the catalog of chart lessons for InvestTalk insiders. It's easy, free. You can sign up now on investtalk.com.
Our podcast distribution is made possible, as always, by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. It's not enough to save enough to retire. You need to plan how to make that money last. Besides keeping the risk factor under control, you also need a strategy that gives you growth, because you need to stay ahead of inflation and taxes. You may need the services of a registered investment advisor and a financial advisor. You get both from KPP Financial. See their family of investment programs on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab.
I have been told that when a company is reporting their earnings, and I'm not a long-term trader, I'm, you know, in and out, that you should sell your stock before the earnings report comes out. I don't understand the reasoning of that, and I just want to know if that is correct in your eyes. Thank you.
Not necessarily. There's an old saying called buy the rumor and sell the news. And so that's what that's based on. Usually if the earnings are going to be good or bad, the stock price will move up or down prior to the actual announcement of earnings. Now, of course, no one's supposed to know what the numbers are beforehand, but it tends to seem to be true that the stock will move up or down prior to the earnings be announced. And then when the earnings actually come out, you know, if the stock was pushed up, they would, the earnings, even if it's good, will sell off. It has to be better than good, better than, much better than expected. If on the downside, if the news is, you know, going to be negative on earnings, the stock will already sell off and the stock will probably bounce up once they announce the earnings. So I don't think selling a stock before the earnings come out is worthless. I think it's worthless. I don't think it's worth anything because you never know which direction is really the truth. And, you know, if earnings, the best way, in my opinion, is stay away from the stock that's going to have earnings anytime soon. Earnings reports within the next few weeks, stay away from it if you are a trader, because you cannot predict which way it's going to run if you are a trader. If you're a long-term investor, you don't care. You don't care about earnings announcements. But she said she was in and out of stocks, so she's trading them. So I just would stay away from the earnings announcement date. I'll stay away from that stock that within the next few weeks they're going to have an earnings announcement. I'd stay away from it because you can't predict it, which way it's going to run. 888-99-CHART. How much income in retirement do you really need? There's an old rule of thumb that you need about 80%. Yeah, don't you love me? I have all these old rule of thumbs. Well, they go back many years, and at one point they're probably true. You needed about 80% of your income as replacement in retirement. And that's kind of not so much, you know, relied on anymore. You need a better figure is your personal target consumption of money. What's your personal target consumption of money? How much money do you need? You got to figure that out in retirement. And are you going to change your consumption in retirement? Some of the changes are automatic. For instance, if you retire, you're no longer paying income tax, right? You don't have to pay income tax. So you also don't pay Social Security tax. So there's right there. You don't need that more than, you know, the 20%. It's probably, you know, remember 80% what you need to replace it. It's probably more. Also, your expenses of working go down. On the other hand, maybe your expenses of entertainment go up. So how much is your personal target consumption dollar-wise? How many dollars do you need every month? I think that 80% rule is just too simplistic. You need to be a little bit more, you need to be a little sharper with that number. And you can do that. Also, try to remember that, you know, if you're commuting to work, you won't have that expense anymore. You know, going out to lunch every day if you do that. And, you know, it's the 80% rule applies much less to people who are making more money, making higher incomes, than those people who are making middle class, middle income, middle size income, or lower income. Because remember, the lower income, you guys in middle income, we are already, you know, living from paycheck to paycheck. So we need that money because that's what's supporting us. But if you're a higher income person, usually there's things that you, you know, you don't really have that much concern. You can cut back on certain things pretty easily, you know. So how much money do you really need? And you have to kind of do it individually, by person. And I'll help you with that. I can do that, help you with that, find out what that number is. Our hour's up. Maybe there's a question that you didn't get a chance to ask. I'd love to hear from you. You can still get it to me. Our anytime number is 888-99-CHART. Leave your question and we'll answer on the next Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join me again tomorrow on Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.